You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Introducing the two-way V4, where groundbreaking fuel cell technology meets fresh foam cushioning for the ultimate performance. With fuel cell, each step feels explosive, delivering unparalleled energy return. Paired with fresh foam, experience maximum comfort throughout the game. Its lightweight textile upper offers support and breathability without sacrificing agility. Whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the two-way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the two-way for yourself at NewBalance.com.
Hello and welcome into the 24/7 Sports Football Recruiting Podcast. I'm National Recruiting Analyst Cooper Patton alongside 24/7 Sports Director of Scouting Andrew Ivins. We got a great show for you today, this Wednesday. We got Tom Loy on the show. He is probably going to break down every single team in the country. He has been a busy man, but the recruiting juice, it is flowing right now. We're also going to have a new segment called Oyster Boys Improv, and we got to give credit where credit is due. The boys at PFF, they kind of put us on to this idea. NFL Stock Exchange, great podcast there, but we'll do our own twist on things a little bit. But Drew, one little thing, are college football coaches heading to the NFL like we think? Brandon Marcello, he tweeted about it yesterday. I tweeted about it earlier in the week, and here is the tweet. I dug around my 24/7 Sports Coaching Carousel database. 22 FBS coaches have taken NFL jobs this cycle. 15 NFL coaches have taken FBS jobs. 7 UFL CFL coaches have taken FBS jobs as well. So maybe, maybe not. Last year, 28 FBS coaches to the NFL. Drew, I have some thoughts on this, but I want to get your reactions first to Brandon Marcello's tweet.
Interesting. Thought about it at length last night when it came across my timeline. And I think Marcello's onto something, but this tweet doesn't address the fact that we've seen so many head coaches leave for coordinator positions, right? You got Kane Womack, South Alabama head coach. Now he's the Alabama DC. You had Jeff Hafley leave Boston College to go to be the Green Bay Packers DC. Chip Kelly leaves UCLA to be Ohio State's OC. Obviously, Jim Harbaugh off to the NFL. Sean Elliott at Georgia State to South Carolina. I don't know, Coop. I told you this, I think, when I was in Nashville for signing day. Two of the best, I would call, recruiters and evaluators I've ever been around since I've worked at 24/7 Sports. Charlie Partridge, who was at Pittsburgh, and then Ephraim Banda, who was at the University of Miami. I mean, these guys eat, breathe, sleep, recruiting, and they were also really good coaches and talent developers and evaluators. All that, that was what they liked to do. Both those guys are now in the NFL. Ephraim Banda is with the Cincinnati Bengals, and obviously Charlie Partridge is heading to the Indianapolis Colts. So the numbers might tell a different story, but to me, when some of the best when it comes to talent acquisition are in the NFL, I think it says a lot.
It feels different, right? I don't know why it feels more noteworthy this cycle than it did last cycle, and you're talking about a six-point difference, right, from this year to last year. The NFL draft also hasn't occurred yet. We'll see what happens after the NFL combine. I think if those changes are still going to be made, they're going to happen before spring ball. I think you could still see some moves to the NFL as well, so we'll see what happens there. I thought Kenny Dillingham put out a pretty interesting didn't put out the tweet, but was quoted and saying, I literally spent 9 years of my life doing anything to become a coffee boy. So don't give me the, oh, it's hard to be a coach right now. Yeah, it's hard. Then quit. I get it. Trust me. I get it if you're Kenny Dillingham. I get it. There's been some other people out there on the personnel side as well to echo kind of that sentiment. It's not that. I don't think it's about working hard. I don't think it's about other coaches who have been in the industry for quite some time saying, hey, we need to slow down, take a collective breath. It's that the calendar is relentless and it really doesn't make any logical sense. I think that's where it's coming from, right? So if there's issues that could be fixed in a more efficient way to be doing things, then why wouldn't you do that? And then there's always going to be people like Kenny Dillingham that are always going to propose that the solution is just work harder. I get it. I understand that. You can bury your head in the sand. You can go be that guy and says, hey, I'm going to do whatever it takes. I'm going to wake up very early. I'm going to have my three cups of coffee by 6 a.m. What are you doing? Yeah, I completely understand that. Is that a sustainable way? to go about the future of college football? I don't think so. So I think there's two sides to this, a little bit of yin and yang. Guess what? If I had the 50th ranked recruiting class in the country, I got paid $3.85 million a year, I wouldn't be complaining about that either. So I don't know if it's about Kenny Dillingham or some of these head coaches as much as it is about some of these other guys lower on the totem pole that are working the same exact hours and really start to take a look back and face the question of, hey, is this something that is really worth it for me at the end of the day, that I think a lot of people in the industry are going through right now? And I think that's a fair question to ask. I don't think you have to challenge their manhood in the process. So that's what I think about that. I think it's going to be fascinating to watch. The other thing about the Marcello tweet is, I want to see the numbers over the last 5 years. 1 year, 6-point difference. I don't think that really says anything to me. I want to see what this looked like kind of pre-NIL and transfer portal, and then we can dive into that and kind of see what that looks like. So, you know, Bud Elliott's out there talking about fake outrage and all this stuff. I don't think that it's that at all. I actually think there's some merit in this, and we'll see what happens. So, anyway, guys, great intro to the show. Love the energy. And if you like the show, you can find us every Tuesday, Wednesday on the 24/7 Sports Football Recruiting Podcast, 5 o'clock Eastern Time. Make sure to like and subscribe. And without further ado, let's bring in the other Oyster Boy, or the guy that's trying to become an Oyster Boy. He's in the middle of tryouts right now. That is Tom Loy. And Tom Loy's been hard at work, one of the hardest working guys in the industry. And Tom, we're looking in this rundown. I feel like you got scoop pretty much on every program in the country. You were at the Midwest Combine, best of the Midwest Combine over the weekend. Let's start there. The alpha dog, Terry Walker, a guy from Lawrence Central right there in Indiana. What'd you think about him?
Man, I loved him. 6'4", 180 pounds. Just there's not a lot not to like. I mean, he looks great. Kind of a burst off the bus guy for you guys, I'm sure. But class of 2026 guy, no offers yet. Fully expect that to change this offseason. So ton to like there. Big time talent. Threw the ball really well. Was accurate. Was the most complete, polished quarterback at the event, and really turned a lot of heads. So wanted to show him some love offensively. A kid out of Ohio, class of 2026, wide receiver Jaden Ricketts, 6 foot, 190. Actually, the three guys I'm going to talk about, he's the only one with an offer. He's got an offer from Bowling Green. So shout out to him for that. But again, all three of these guys, I think, are going to start to really blow up a little bit this offseason. Lastly, defensively, we got Leo, Indiana High School, class of 2025 defensive back Landon Heppner, 6 foot, 185 pounder. He can play on both sides of the ball. Really like him in the secondary. Played a lot of cornerback. They don't really have a safety set up here, but he showed he can cover, which is what I was impressed with. But overall, super instinctive. I really like him at safety. I think he's a guy, especially Mac School, should be all over this kid right now.
Tom, that best of the Midwest Combine, I feel like it's been going on for, I don't know, a decade now. Excited to see if any of these guys, you know, what happens with their recruitments. I already threw Terry Walker in our watch sheet for 2026, so your word is being listened to here at 24/7 Sports. You set the outline last night. I kind of tore it up or moved some things around. I want to ask you about Alabama. You have Alabama on there. Says ready to make some noise, and you listed off some targets. Now, Alabama, Kalen DeBoer's there. They're number 33 in the rankings, just two commits. In the new look SEC, that class would rank 11th. So what do we need to know about the Crimson Tide? Because I'm wondering, when are they going to get things going on the recruiting trail?
Yeah, shout out to Anna Adams, our new national reporter. She talked about top 247 receiver Travis Smith out of Atlanta. Georgia, Tennessee, Auburn, Georgia Tech, Ole Miss, all going to land official visits as it stands right now. But keep an eye on Alabama. I talked to some people connected with the Crimson Tide, and they think that they are an absolute sleeper, and they expect Jamarcus Shepherd to be have Alabama very much in contention there. Another one, three-star cornerback Onis Konanbani from South Carolina. All the buzz is about North Carolina, Miami, South Carolina. But I actually think with this recent Alabama offer could potentially be a game changer. They feel like they're gaining some steam there. Top 100 offensive lineman Micah DeBose out of Alabama. Keep an eye on the Crimson Tide here. They're going to get an official visit. He'll probably take an unofficial visit this spring as well. LSU is also going to get a visit in March. He's going to take five trips. Ohio State, Florida State, Auburn also in play. You got Josh Petty, a guy you guys absolutely love, at least according to your rankings. Top 50 offensive lineman out of Georgia. Georgia's the big, big player here, but I wouldn't count out Alabama, not yet. I'm pretty confident he'll be in Tuscaloosa multiple times over the next few months. Clemson's also a contender, as is Oregon and Tennessee. Andrew Babalolo from Kansas, another elite offensive lineman. Alabama feels they have a great shot there. He told Steve Wilfong that he's going to take spring visits to Auburn, Missouri, Michigan, A&M, Oklahoma, USC, and Stanford. But Alabama is definitely a contender here, so keep an eye on them. But let's be honest. There's a guy that, Notre Dame fans who've been following me for a long time, everybody's going to be watching, Deuce Knight from Mississippi, top 247, four-star quarterback. He's been firmly committed to Notre Dame since September of 2023, but I want to make it very clear here. Alabama is a real threat, and I think they're a bigger threat now than I've thought they were in a long time. And to be honest, like, if this coaching change didn't happen, if Nick Sheridan and Kalen DeBoer and those guys didn't come over, I don't think Alabama had much of a shot. And I was probably watching Ole Miss a little bit more. But the key is that, my honest opinion, I think Knight actually visits Tuscaloosa at some point. I know behind closed doors they're talking about it. It's strongly being considered. So it's got strong connections. Sheridan actually coached his brother, Ty Freifogel, back when he was at Indiana. So all I'm saying right now, Marcus Freeman and the boys inside the Goug at Notre Dame, just keep an eye on your quarterback because Alabama's coming real hard.
Tom, what is Kalen DeBoer selling Deuce Knight? Because I immediately thought of Michael Penix, and the reason I thought about Michael Penix is because you got a left-handed quarterback with a lot of physical clay. We talked a lot about Deuce Knight yesterday on the show as well, but what's the angle here in Tuscaloosa for Deuce Knight?
That's it. That's it right there. I mean, there's strong ties to the staff already, so there's a comfort with that staff in Alabama. The family, first of all, the family loves everything about Notre Dame. They love Marcus Freeman, but they really have an interest in Alabama and this new staff. They really like Coach DeBoer. They like the connection to Michael Penix in terms of the similarities and how he does things and his success under DeBoer at Washington. So that's it. I mean, that's what he's selling. You could be, I mean, I don't want to call it the next Michael Penix, because I'm sure they're not saying that. He could be the first Deuce Knight. But I think that fit, the scheme fit, the depth chart, I think it sets up a little better there in Tuscaloosa.
Andrew, what do you think? I want to get your immediate feedback here. The other thing I think that's important from a context standpoint is a lot of the top guys are off the board, right? Bryce Underwood's off the board. You go down the list, George McIntyre, Tavian St. Clair, Julian Lewis. We'll see what happens with him. We know he's taking visits, but what would you think of a potential marriage of Deuce Knight and Kalen DeBoer?
I kind of love it, right? Because I'm thinking about what you see Michael Penix or what he did at Washington. And remember, we saw him at the Elite 11 Finals. He was one of those kids that went through the pro day, one of the counselors out there. And then you mirror that up to what we saw from Deuce Knight this past weekend at the Under Armour camp. I think it's a similar trajectory with those footballs. You talk about it, both left-handers, both, you know, that slot can put it on a rope to the outside. So I can definitely see that. And I would be excited about Alabama, because I have been wondering, you know, what is the plan for them at quarterback moving forward with Julian Sain leaving for Ohio State? They bring in Austin Mack. That was DeBoer's guy at Washington. But as you said, Cooper, you know, a lot of the top arms are committed. Now, there's always going to be some shuffling with those quarterbacks, but I was interested to I've been waiting to see who they would circle, and Deuce Knight is certainly kind of an eyebrow raiser for me.
I get excited about the offensive line too. Josh Petty, Babalola, DeBose, all names that we like a lot. I think what's interesting also about Alabama is that they're ushering in a new offensive line coach after Scott Huff is off to the Seattle Seahawks. So it'd be interesting. But you know, you look at Washington, I think a lot of people look at that offense and they say, all right, well, the foundation of that offense is Michael Penix, those receivers, Adunze, McMillan, Polk. That offensive line won a Joe Moore Award last year as well. Dylan Johnson was also a huge component to their success down the line. So, Drew, I mean, at least for me, they got to get the trenches right, especially in the Southeastern Conference.
Coop, I actually wrote this down. This feels like Alabama offensive line recruiting of 5 years ago when they were involved with all the high-profile tackles. Now, I know they've gotten some guys, Caden Proctor, who they pried away from Iowa, but it seems like it kind of, you know, trailed off a little bit in the final years of the Nick Saban regime in Tuscaloosa. To me, you look at this list and it's like, okay, I mean, Josh Petty, Andrew Babalola, those are two extremely athletic offensive tackles. You see where we have them ranked. I think that is certainly something to keep an eye on. We talked about Clemson and Matt Luke, what they're doing up front in the trenches. Alabama, man, if they can get one or even two of those guys, you have to feel good about the corner moving forward for Alabama.
We wanted to know what the pulse of the Alabama program was when it came to recruiting under Kalen DeBoer. Tom, you talked about it, I think, just a week ago, and it was kind of cricket. So a week later, you turn the page. It looks like Alabama's starting to get into gear a little bit under Kalen DeBoer. Now, another team that has some ties to the Southeast and especially the state of Florida. How about Penn State? Let's talk about them. Currently with the number 5 ranked recruiting class in 2025, the Nittany Lions under James Franklin, they have signed 7 prospects from the Sunshine State in the last 3 cycles. They struck out in South Florida last cycle, but they're trying to get back in to one of the most talented states in the country. Tom, tell us a little bit about their most recent efforts to do that.
Yeah, for a lot of these guys, I actually feel like Penn State is in a really good spot in that top 3 to 4. Antonio Branch out of Miami, 3-star safety, kind of watching Penn State and Florida State. Then you got Samari Reed out of Pompano Beach, Monarch, another 3-star receiver that Penn State is very much in contention for. Also in play, Florida, Missouri, and West Virginia. You got top 247 receiver Cortez Mills from Homestead. Official visits are locked in. Clemson, Florida, Nebraska, Miami. So I haven't mentioned Penn State. I still think they're a dark horse. He's got a great connection with Juwan Sider, the co-offensive coordinator and running backs coach there. They're very close, so keep an eye on Penn State charging up the leaderboard there. Ty Jackson, Seminole Ridge, 3-star linebacker. Penn State, Florida, Florida State, kind of another toss-up at this point. I think Penn State's pushing the hardest, which is helping them. Nayshawn Montgomery out of Miami Central, a 3-star receiver that's strongly considering Penn State, USC, Louisville, Miami, and Ohio State. And then really the cream of the crop would be Byron Lewis, American Heritage, Fort Lauderdale, top 247 running back. Penn State's starting to make noise. I think it's a school that's not being talked enough about. You're watching Wisconsin, Georgia, Ohio State, but he's on the board still. He hasn't committed anywhere. Sider's pushing for him. The rest of the Penn State staff's doing a good job. So keep an eye on Penn State. And then just lastly, as a little note for Penn State fans, I do like Penn State to eventually get it done for top 247 cornerback Jameer Joseph out of New Jersey. I know we're talking Florida. But a little nugget there, I feel good about the Nittany Lions.
Andrew, which one of these guys, I mean, Florida's your state, right? You know all these guys pretty well. Which one of these guys would be, I would say, an eyebrow raiser for you if the Nittany Lions were able to get it done?
Oh, Coop, I'm going to give you 2 of them. One of them's unranked, Samari Reed, the wide receiver. We have talked about it in this space on this show. We think Penn State, in order to unlock some things, needs to get better at that wide receiver position. And I know Samari Reed is not ranked right now. I've been waiting and waiting and waiting to get some verifieds on him. Hopefully we get him in 2 weeks at the Under Armour Miami event. But this is a kid that caught over 50 passes, 19 touchdowns, over 1,000 yards as a junior. You know, looks 6'2", can get it done on the outside. To me, it's like this is what Penn State needs in that wide receiver room, especially when you look at what they took in the 24 cycle, what they took in the 23 cycle. This is a guy that can win on the outside, turn on the highlight tape, multiple kickoff return touchdowns. He's a build-up speed player. So going to be a high 3-star for us. We'll see again what verifieds we get, but he's also a basketball player, so I love him. And then Ty Jackson, Cooper, I don't know if you've buzzed this kid. Someone we saw at the National Combine. He goes to Seminole Ridge High School, which does not have many, if any, Power 5 talent coming through the doors. Tons of schools were there this spring to see him. He's a tackling machine. 378 tackles the past 2 years. But at the National Combine, man, he ran the fastest short shuttle, second best broad jump for anyone over 200 pounds. Tossing a 40-yard dash time that was top 25 at the event. This is a 3-down linebacker. Tom mentioned Sider, the ace recruiter for Penn State. He's got ties to Palm Beach County. I would keep an eye on Ty Jackson heading to Penn State, and he's a guy that I think can make plays in the Big Ten.
Penn State, a team to watch. They have done a really good job in the Sunshine State. You take last year, I guess, with a grain of salt, but the years before that, guys like King Mack, other guys as well that we really like. So going to be interesting to see what Penn State, James Franklin, can get done in the Sunshine State. Tom, another team that seems to be charging and another team that seems to be just a household name when we talk about one of the best recruiting programs in the country, that is Texas, Steve Sarkisian, and they are looking for another year of another elite defensive backhaul. You think about what they did last year, Kobe Black, Xavier Filsome, Jordan Johnson, Rebel, and Santana Wilson. This year, well, they're eyeing guys like Kobe Sellers, Jabari Antoine, Caleb Chester, and Cortland Guillory. Tom, what do you think? Can they make it happen again?
Yeah, I think they're in a good spot for a lot of these guys. But I think, you know, you mentioned him right there. Jabari Antoine would be a massive win, flipping him from LSU. You know, he's a Louisiana native, top 150 kid at the cornerback position. He's committed. He committed to LSU back in January over Texas and a few others. But this one just doesn't feel over quite yet. Texas is still pushing really hard. They're looking to get him for an official visit. And defensive backs coach Terry Joseph has strong, strong ties to Louisiana. So keeping an eye on them here, I think Texas has a better shot than most realize. But the other one I want to mention, top 247 four-star cornerback Corey Sellers from Pearland, Texas. Oklahoma is the crystal ball favorite, not counting out the Sooners. I think they're very much a top contender. But I'm not ruling out Texas right now. I think they have a chance to make a really big move, beat out Oklahoma, Georgia, Oregon, A&M. LSU, probably the sleeper. They got some family ties to Baton Rouge, and a decision is coming in July. But keeping on Texas there, I think they have a real, real shot.
Andrew, just real quick, little off-road question here for you. Texas entering the SEC here in 2024. How would you grade? I mean, you don't have to give a letter grade, but I guess, you know, just a short synopsis of how do you feel Texas is recruiting heading into the most elite conference in college football?
Well, I was going to toss this question to you guys. It feels like Texas is recruiting as national as ever. I mean, would you guys kind of agree with that? I mean, 2 weeks ago, Steve Sarkisian was in Orlando speaking at a Nike coaches clinic, and I think that was a strategy play. I mean, Texas pulled Cedric Baxter out of the Sunshine State. That was really the first time in a while that they had gone into Florida and landed a blue chipper like that. I think what stands out to me, and I know there's a lot of Texas DBs or guys from the Lone Star State that Tom just brought up, but Jabari Antoine, I mean, that's a kid from Louisiana. It seems like under Sark, Texas is not afraid to go outside the borders, and it's an interesting play, especially given the talent in the NFL players that come out of Texas.
I think you got to be careful with that strategy, but I also think if you're calculated, it could work out. Like, I think you and I talked about it, Andrew, a little bit. When they went to Florida to get CJ Baxter, I thought that was such a huge statement. You get one of the best running backs in the country. You see the immediate return on investment. Guys like Tashard Choice, those are guys that kind of can transcend geographical boundaries, I feel like, from a relationship standpoint. Louisiana is interesting as well because they dip in there, I think, just last year, 2023, go get a guy like Derek Williams. That's a guy that plays for them very early on the back end, going to be a staple of who they're going to be. So Texas, an interesting spot. I agree with you. I mean, Texas and the state of Florida, they put out more talent per capita every year in the NFL. So you got to be careful to kind of toe the line a little bit there. Tom, we're going to go out west, speaking of geographical boundaries, and we're going to go to Arizona, a team we don't talk a lot about on this show, especially since Jed Fish has moved to the University of Washington. The Wildcats, they currently have the number 66 ranked recruiting class. Well, that makes sense. You only have one prospect committed, and that's a Georgia-based athlete from Bryce Lewis. They have some targets here, and you see those guys here. Mason Posa, a guy that we really like. Logan Powell as well. Tom, tell us a little bit about what the Wildcats got cooking under Brent Brennan.
Yeah, Mason Posa was fired up to land that Arizona offer. Strong ties with linebackers coach Danny Gonzalez. But keeping on Oregon, A&M, Utah, USC, they're all, you know, major contenders. But if Arizona can keep him local and land him, that's going to be a massive win for the Wildcats. But a couple other guys, four-star offensive lineman Logan Powell from Brophy Prep in Phoenix, little tongue twister. His brother plays for the Wildcats, so there's clearly a familiarity and a comfort level with Arizona right now. But I like Arizona. I think they're a really big contender there. But, I mean, this kid's got a national offer list. So you're looking at A&M, Tennessee, Michigan, all major contenders. The one I'm really watching, I think it would be, and it was just a three-star, but the big fish would be Raiden Vines-Bright out of IMG Academy. He is originally from Arizona before transferring to Bradenton, but I think Arizona is a dark horse. I think they have a very real shot. The staff at Arizona feels really good about it. Notre Dame, USC, Michigan, Washington are all pushing hard to land him. But in the end, this guy could be a homebody, and coming back home to play for Arizona, I think, is a very real possibility.
Little zone of scoop. Got to love it. And Drew, you got something here on the Wildcats?
The rule of thumb with the IMG Academy kids is if they transfer in, they normally transfer somewhere back close to home. That has kind of been the trend over the years, especially the ones that just show up for their senior season. The guys that come in as sophomores and juniors, that changes a little bit. But normally they go back to that same area. And Tom, I know you keep saying Raiden Vines-Bright is a three-star. We'll see him at this IMG Pro Day. I think it's next week. I'm fired up because I love the tape. I absolutely love it of Vines-Bright.
Got to keep an eye on Tom over there, man. Swerving out of his lane. He's getting used to it. Hey, Tom, you got a good set of eyes, baby. We love it.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
All right, let's talk about the Huskies a little bit. We talked about Jed Fish leaving Arizona, going to UW there in Seattle. I'm interested to kind of see what this recruiting operation is going to look like in Montlake. Right now, ranked the number 44 class in the country, number 11 in the Big Ten. Tom, what's the latest out of Seattle?
Top 100 linebacker Zadarius Rainey-Sale from Washington. He was actually a Huskies commit at one point. I think Washington is a threat to get them back in the class. He's got a big Alabama visit on deck this spring. I think in the end, it's going to be, do I want to stay home and play for Washington? And then you got Hayden Lowe, top 247 defensive lineman out of Oaks Christian in Westlake Village, California. Washington's a big player here. They're pushing really hard for the California native. The Huskies feel really good about their chances. They think they can get that one done. But again, they're going to have to beat the likes of UCLA, USC, two other local heavy hitters in that one. But man, if Washington can get that done, that'd be big for the new staff there.
Andrew, you and I haven't really talked about Jed Fish to Washington. It felt like it almost got swept under the rug a little bit with everything that happened with Kalen DeBoer, his departure, Nick Saban as well. What do you feel about that fit with Jed Fish to UW? It's not I wouldn't call it a lateral move. It's a step up, but it was almost like incremental. Obviously, he's getting paid over $7 million a year. I'm fascinated to kind of see how this one turns out.
And he said that. I think he made the move, and he said he would have got paid whatever at Arizona, but it was about getting his staff members more money, and he brought a lot of those guys from Arizona to Washington with him. When Jed Fish was hired at Arizona, I think me and you both kind of scratched our heads and everyone else in the national media, like, is this guy going to be able to recruit at, a program like that? And then 2 years later, we were kind of, giving glowing reviews of the recruiting class and the talent and the type of players he's got there. Look, I think it's going to be difficult at Washington on field in 2024. They lose a lot from what we saw in the college football playoff and from this past season. So to me, Jed and that staff are going to have to be able to generate some momentum, sell the vision of the new coach, and we'll see where they finish in the rankings. But it's not kind of like a ideal situation in my eyes, even though they're coming off, again, an appearance in the title game and being kind of the toast of the town in college football. Like, I think it is not going to be easy. And Coop, I don't know if you agree just kind of with that thought process.
Yeah, I think one win in his first season, 5 in the second, 10 in the third. So you talk about, I think, one of the best rebuild jobs we have seen in a very long time in all of college football. Jed Fish just pulled that off at Arizona. The thing is, Washington just played in a national championship. Well, that's a depleted roster. A lot of those guys left, whether it's to the NFL or whether it's following Kalen DeBoer to Tuscaloosa. So he's going to have his work cut out for him. He's been there. He's done that. I think more resources in Seattle. Fairly comfortable to say that as well. I'm a big fan of his, man, and quite honestly, he has proved me wrong over the last 3 years at every stop. So I'm excited to see what he can do at the University of Washington. All right, last one here. Let's go sicko mode, Tom. You threw this in, kind of caught us by surprise a little bit. The boys love some Manny Diaz. Let's talk some Duke football. What you got?
Yeah, I think that he's the key here. So they got linebacker Luke Metz out of Mill Creek in Georgia. Duke's doing a great job. I think they're kind of a dark horse. It's not being talked about enough. But I will say I liked Duke a little bit more before LSU decided to offer and make this one a lot more interesting. Metz is going to visit in March and check out LSU. But as it stands right now, Duke's a top contender. They're a major player in this one, and also keep an eye on Virginia and Oklahoma. But the big fish, Bryce Davis from Greensboro, North Carolina, top 100 edge rusher. I actually feel better right now about Duke's chances with Davis than I do about Metz. They're in a tight battle with North Carolina, Georgia, Clemson, Ohio State. And I think on paper, most would be shocked if Duke won this recruitment. But Manny Diaz, Harlan Bower, they have Davis a lot higher on Duke than most realize. And the family loves everything about Duke, academics, the athletics, everything kind of seems to sit well with the Davis family. So keeping it on Duke, that would be a major, major win.
Drew, I love some Bryce Davis, man. He could play. I think that kid is a playmaker. And for Duke to potentially be able to pull that one off. I mean, Drew, you've been a Manny Diaz guy for quite some time now. What do you think about his efforts there at Duke and what Duke can be? Can he pick it up from where Mike Elko left it?
I think he can kind of keep it on course. I will say this. I think Duke already has 3 commits in the 25 cycle. Seems like, as Tom has alluded to, they're trending for some blue chippers that normally the Blue Devils aren't involved with. To me, Manny Diaz was at Miami. He learned how to recruit there or be a head coach recruiter. You can poke a lot of holes in how it went in his final recruiting classes. Gets out of football, resurfaces at Penn State, where he learns under James Franklin. I think he has shown up in Durham with a newfound sense of urgency, and he wants to get it done on the recruiting trail. Like, to me, I'm surprised they have this many guys already in the boat for a guy that was hired a little bit later in the cycle. Fired up to see how this class comes together, and the strength is going to be on that defensive side of the ball. His scheme, it is super friendly for defensive linemen. Like, they are telling Bryce Davis, all right, you are going to rack up sacks. I will show you what I did with these guys at Miami. I'll show you what I did with these guys at Penn State. You will do the same here, and we will help you get to the NFL. So, no, it's certainly. And then finally, Luke Metz. Tom, I threw on his tape before we got on here. Man, it's a 2-down linebacker with instincts. That guy can play some football out of Mill Creek, which has churned out some really notable players here in recent cycles, like Caleb Downs.
Encouraging to say the least that they're in it with a guy like Bryce Davis, top 100 prospect in 2025. Tom Loy, a pleasure as always. Fantastic job. Tom Loy, brought to you by Roback, always outfitting our man, making sure that he's looking the best in the business. You can follow him at Tom Loy 247. Guys, Tuesday, Wednesday, you got the Oyster Boys. I know I beat that drum really hard. On Monday, you got the 24/7 Sports Recruiting Show. How about Thursday? You got 24/7 Sports Live that you can find on the 24/7 Sports YouTube channel, 5 o'clock Eastern Time. Emily Proud will be there tomorrow along with some of the best analysts in the business. All right, Drew, introducing a new segment. I'm pretty excited about this. I kind of mentioned it at the top of the show and where we got the idea from a little bit. But we have Oyster Boys Improv. So what that means is that Andrew's going to ask me a question that I think he manufactured before the show that I have no idea what's coming, and vice versa. So that's how we're going to do that. That's how you know you're going to get a raw reaction here. Drew, I guess I'll cue you up first here, but my question here, I got it written down. I didn't even put it on the script. My question is, who reaches a CFP semifinal first? Brent Venables, Josh Heupel, Brian Kelly, or Kalen DeBoer?
You gotta read. So I had Brent Venables,
SEC.
Josh Heupel.
Yes.
So we're all in the SEC. Oh, great. My question's similar, but it's not similar. I'm thinking quarterbacks here. I think DeBoer would be number four for me right now, right? Because this is more of a question in terms of 2023. Do I think Oklahoma? Do I think Tennessee? And who was the other one?
Brian Kelly. Brian Kelly.
Oof. LSU. I'm going LSU. I think the addition of good friend of the pod, Blake Baker, what they have done on the defensive side of the ball. I'm a Garrett Nussmeier fan. And I think that they could be a potential sleeper in 2024. And I think you look towards 2025. So I'm going to go with LSU. I love this question, though. Tennessee with Nico Iamalieva. You think about James Pierce. I could buy into Tennessee as well. What about you? You had the question. So what did you got?
I went Tennessee, and your head went exactly where my head went, which immediately I thought quarterback, right? So you look at LSU, they got Nussmeier, Oklahoma, Jackson Arnold, and then you look at Tennessee with Nico, and then Kalen DeBoer, Jalen Milroe, obviously a great player, and we'll see what happens beyond him. I like Tennessee. Tennessee is where I went. I think immediately, you know, I think about Josh Heupel, that offense, what they brought in, obviously, at the skill positions. I think the quarterback makes it go. You think about the success that they had 2 years ago with a guy like Hendon Hooker. You and I talk about it all the time. Timing, anticipation, accuracy. That's how that offense goes, right? It's a up-tempo offense, and it's all built around efficiency. I think Nico's that guy. I don't think they had that last year in Joe Milton because that's not his skill set. Sure, a lot of arm talent, but in terms of being able to play within himself, that's not his game. I get excited when I think about Nico and this offense, and yeah, maybe a little bit of recency bias coming off the Cheez-It Bowl as well, but I really like Tennessee, and I just gravitate to quarterback. And you think about guys like Jordan Ross and David Hobbs and what they've done defensively as well, like what they've done in the secondary. They're one of the most deceptive rosters, I think, pound for pound in terms of how they've built this thing over the last two cycles as well. So, Drew, I'm high on Tennessee. I like Tennessee a lot. And who would have thought? I mean, those are three really, really good coaches. And I think the other team could be Oklahoma because they got the guy in the middle as well with Jackson Arnold. I think the other thing that we have yet to see materialize is that their talent really bubble up and be ready to play. You talk about guys like PJ Adebore, Peyton Bowen as well. Those are the early contributors. Drew, I think this is one of the most talented teams, not only in the SEC, in the country here. I love the roster makeup and what they've done recruiting-wise. So I thought that one was a toss-up. The biggest question I have about LSU is the front seven. And I think that defense needs a total revamp. And that was the only hesitation on that. I think Blake Baker's going to get it right, but I think one of those other guys is going to get there first.
Well, you also got to remember Blake Baker, when he took over at Missouri, he retooled and remanufactured that defense real fast via the transfer portal. And it really wasn't a bunch of blue chip recruits. And it seems like LSU is trying to do the same thing. Tennessee, maybe they should have been my answer. I feel like I've been saying this for 2 years now, but every time Tennessee gets a defensive commit, I'm like, okay, I think this guy that they're bringing in elevates the floor of the defense, and this group is getting better and better. With Tennessee, the thing is, we know they're going to score points. They just got to stop other opponents, and there hasn't been many defensive takes as of late where I'm like, I don't understand the vision for this with the Volunteers. You said it, Jordan Ross. I mean, James Pierce, they got there as well. So Tennessee, Oklahoma, interesting one because the offensive line, you know, was kind of rated not only by the NFL draft, but also the transfer portal with Caden Green leaving, going off to, Missouri. But I'm a Jackson Arnold believer. I think with them, you also got to bring up the fact that Jeff Lebby, he's out, you know, off to Mississippi State. So you got a coordinator change, but I guess you could bring up the same thing with LSU and Mike Denbrock heading to South Bend. I don't know. It's a fascinating question. Let me toss it back to you on this. Do you think one of those four get into the 12-team playoff here in 2024?
I think you could have two of the four that gets in there, quite honestly. You know, I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, think about LSU. They've won 20 games in the last 2 years. I think their floor is extremely high. Now, I think part of that last year is that LSU, without Jaden Daniels, you throw in Garrett Nussmeier, and this is nothing against him. This is more so to do with the defense. It's probably a 7-win team without a Heisman Trophy winner, right? So that's going to be pretty interesting to see if LSU can make enough improvements defensively. I think Tennessee arrows pointing up. I think there will be some bumps along the way for Oklahoma. And I just don't know what to expect out of Alabama other than the fact that they're going to be really well coached. Now, from a personnel standpoint, I think it might take some time to gel. Doesn't mean that they don't have talent, but in terms of maybe a guy like Jalen Milroe fitting in a Kalen DeBoer offense, we'll see. That being said, I think if there's one lesson that I learned last year, don't doubt Jalen Milroe. Guy's a gamer, right? You can do a lot of different things with him. I wouldn't be surprised. You know, if you threw those teams in a hat right now and you said, hey, this team was going to be the team to make us CFP in 2024, I wouldn't be shocked if we had one or two of those teams out of the four that we just discussed.
And I think with Alabama, you know, ask this question 2 months from now when the next transfer portal window opens up. I mean, they add Keon Sab, former top 247 safety from Michigan. I think we're going to see them be pretty active when it comes to hunting down veterans that can come in and play right away, because they had to replace some guys at some key positions. It's not just Caleb Downs and Caden Proctor. Like, there are some bodies that left that building. I agree, they're going to be coached well, but are they going to have the horses to run the race? I don't know. Talking 2024 with them.
Last point on Alabama real quick. I think it's important to note that Kalen DeBoer's best work in terms of player acquisition was done through the transfer portal at Washington. You got Penix, you got Jalen Polk, you got Jabbar Muhammad, you got Dylan Johnson as well. So you got four or five starters that came over. Those weren't doubles. Those weren't triples. All five of those guys were home runs, right? So I think they deserve a lot of credit there. You mentioned the spring transfer portal window. That's really not where a lot of teams do the majority of their shopping, but I would expect them to be opportunistic, right?
Oh, I think we are entering an era where it's a little bit different, right? A couple of years ago, you wouldn't shop in the spring transfer portal window, but this is still new. So yes, you're right. I don't think there's as many goods available, if that makes sense.
All right, what you got for me, Drew?
Okay. Sorry, I was getting a phone call. I wrote mine down. Can you read this or no?
Oh, wow. We weren't far off from our questions, huh?
I know. That's what I said.
I like the fact that you wrote that down. All right. For those of you who can't read, it says, who has more wins in 2024? We got Nico, Jackson Arnold, or Avery Johnson. I mean, that's a... Okay. Yeah. Give me what you got.
All three of these guys are entering year two. All three of them started a bowl game, right? So Nico at Tennessee in the Cheez-It Bowl, Jackson Arnold in the, the Alamo Bowl for Oklahoma. And then you had Avery Johnson in the infamous Pop-Tart Bowl for Kansas State. All right, all these guys are top 247 quarterbacks. All of them are clear-cut, going to be the QB1 in 2024. Yeah, we're not far off at all. I guess we're throwing Kansas State in the mix.
I don't have the schedules in front of me, but that's not a crutch. I mean, I just talked about Josh Heupel. I talked about Nico. I love that fit. I think the roster is at a perfect balance right now, quite honestly, in terms of what they have at the skill positions, what they're surrounding him with. You go out, you get a guy like Lance Hurd from LSU as well, the former five-star. I like Tennessee. I'm going to ride with Nico, but the number two for me would be Kansas State and Avery Johnson. I think Avery Johnson is going to take college football by storm. I also think Nico is as well. So I'm so excited to see those guys. The other thing is, Drew, I mean – what I like about NIL, especially in the case of Avery Johnson, is I think both of these guys, I don't know if there's a better fit for them to be successful, not only now on Saturdays, but as it projects to Sundays, than the current programs that they're at. I love Avery Johnson, the system that they run. Colin Klein there was obviously last year now at Texas A&M. I thought that was such a beautiful fit. And then Nico with Josh Heupel. Drew, I mean, these two dynamic playmakers, obviously Avery Johnson more so with his legs. But while we're on the talk of mobility, I turned on that game of Nico against Iowa, and there was so much more there from a running standpoint that I did not see in high school that I thought he was capable of. And it's going to be interesting if Josh Heupel will lean on his legs at times, similar to a way like Hendon Hooker, right? He was athletic enough to where you really kind of had to respect him in the run game. But I'm going to ride with Nico, man. I think Nico, those of you who follow this show, follow recruiting, understand Nico, understand the recruitment, obviously the expectations. I'll use the Josh Pate term here, to the casuals, right, who have heard his name just a little bit, I expect this dude very, very quickly to become one of the faces of college football.
Vegas win totals for these teams: Tennessee, 8.5, Oklahoma, 7.5, Kansas State, 9.5.
Tennessee and Oklahoma seem pretty low, don't they? I mean, yeah, I have not looked at the schedule. I don't know. 7.5 for Oklahoma?
Yeah.
Oklahoma's at Baton Rouge, right? Right? Those are the games where you're just like, oh, they got LSU later in the season. So, yeah, that's going to be interesting. Drew, what'd you think? What's your boys' improv? New segment? Good enough to hang around?
I think so. I think the idea here is college football or recruiting, right? Like, we can go in a variety of different directions. It's funny that, you know, first go round, we got Tennessee and Oklahoma overlap. Hey, Nico, Avery Johnson, what also is similar about them? Both those guys on my freaks list. You mentioned Nico, and I think the average fan not knowing about him, like, this is a kid that could have played Division I college volleyball. The first time you see him, you'll never forget it in terms of him throwing in person. And then Avery Johnson, I mean, he tested off the charts. He had a better spark rating than Jalen Hurts and Lamar Jackson coming out of high school. He's a guy that could punch it on the hardwood, to steal a term from our good friend Gabe Brooks. You know, I'm excited because I think you're right. Like, we'll come to the college football season. These guys will be on the preseason magazine, but most people aren't going to realize when they're standing in line at Publix, like, all right, who is this individual? All it's going to take is 2 or 3 weeks.
Yeah, Nico, best way I can describe him for those who haven't seen him play is like Justin Herbert frame with Bryce Young pocket mobility, right? He's got a little bit of that improv magic, speaking of the segment as well. But Drew, good first segment. I think that one's going to stick around for a while. Guys, we appreciate Tom Lloyd jumping on the show as always. And guys, like I said, make sure to like and subscribe to the 24/7 Sports Football Recruiting Pod. You can find us every Tuesday and Wednesday. We appreciate our loyal listeners, especially if you hung around yesterday. Maybe the nerdiest show that we've ever done, an hour of just 2025, 2026 recap. You will be better for it, I promise. Guys, from the Oyster Boys, for Andrew Ivins, I'm Cooper Patagna. Have a great rest of your week, and we'll see you next week.
It's the NFL offseason, but on Pick 6, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, the football season never stops. Host Will Brinson, John Breach, and Tyler Sullivan are joined by analysts like Brady Quinn, Leslie Deuceable, Katie Mox, and RJ White to keep you in the loop on everything happening around the league. Whether it's free agents signing with new teams, the all-important NFL draft, or schedule release day, Pick 6 has you covered. As the face of the league changes with every team move and player pickup this spring, Pick 6 is a must listen. Download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and anywhere podcasts are found.